Welcome back, everybody, to the latest episode of the Mad Nerds Podcast, episode 18, Plot Twists. I am, of course, your host, Superhero Deuce, after a couple weeks off with Mike. Mike is the hat.
Mm-hmm.
All over the interwebs.
Just keeping it simple. Just keeping it simple that week, this week. Let's get hit him with the
Yep, just give him a Yeah, man, I kind of made that noise a couple times watching the last few episodes of Gotham. The producers of the show, the runners of the show tease the Joker's origin is going to begin in these episodes. And we have a couple different things, man. Starting off with a couple weeks ago, we got that episode with the circus. We got the Flying Graysons going. We got this Jerome kid. A lot happened there. And then, of course, we had Red Hood and the Red Hood gang in this week's episode. So, Mike, kind of just talk about both episodes, kind of as one in the whole, because a lot of the plots carried through, but also individually. What were your thoughts of these last couple of episodes of Gotham?
The Blind Fortune Teller, which was the episode with the circus, was okay. Like, it wasn't great. It wasn't bad. Like, the last 2 weeks of Gotham were just kind of like, especially this Red Hood one, I found it very preposterous. I thought it was garbage. Like, that's the first episode that I thought was actually terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It was just so disjointed. You know, and I'll give Gotham, this is my thing. We've gotten long enough into the Gotham season, we're 17 episodes in, that they just have way too much going on. There are so many different story arcs that are completely separate from each other that are just impossible to follow and track all of them with any kind of consistency. Like, as of right now, as this episode just ended, you have the Red Hood gang with another Joker lookalike putting on the hood. You have Penguin and his club flopping. You have Fish Mooney and the Dollmaker. We'll get to that. Dr. Dollmaker, who's clearly the Dollmaker. Like, just stupid. And then you've got, you know, Bruce Wayne and Wayne Enterprises, and they're trying to kill him, and they had the guy stab Alfred. Then you've got, you know, Jim Gordon and his love issues. You have Barbara Keene and, you know, Selina Kyle and, you know, Poison Ivy hanging out and having girl time. Like, so much going on. It's impossible to follow all this. They have to get this show in a much narrower scope and spend more time actually doing story than what they're doing right now.
Just the whole thing, like what they had going on with Bruce Wayne, I actually liked from the last episode.
I agree. I enjoyed that.
The whole Red Hood thing was just ridiculous. Like, I was just sitting there. I was like, this isn't even pulling me in. I'm not excited about this at all. This is a blasphemy to all that is the origin stories in the comic books. Like, I don't, I was just getting mad. And I was like, how am I going to talk about this without cursing? And I can't really do a very good job of that. So I'm keeping my things, like, very limited.
Yes.
Like, we had the kid. The kid did pick up the mask at the end, so that could be another Joker thing. But then you had the guy bombing on the stage, which is where the actual Red Hood thing comes from. Is like,
yeah, bad comedian.
Joker's a comedian that bombs in the mafia nightclubs, and they get him to be a scapegoat for a robbery that they commit. No, instead it's a fat doughboy baker guy that got denied a loan, so he's like, I'm going to rob the banks, but I'm going to steal this thing from this kid that had a sock on his head.
And the thing too, I mean, it was kind of funny that everybody who put on the hood ended up dead. Like, that was an interesting theme. But I'm with you, Mike. That whole storyline to me was just ridiculous. And going back to the last episode, too, with the kid who played, you know, Jerome, who could be the Joker. Yeah, the laugh and, like, the whole psychosis thing, yeah, that was good. Like, he put in a good performance. The blind fortune teller thing, I mean, it was okay. It's just that it's like, oh, so this guy's satanic or whatever. And then, oh, so he covered up because he's Jerome's dad. I'm like, I just don't care. Like, and then that you had the whole romance with, you know, Dr. Leslie Tompkins and, you know, Jim Gordon, and that lasted all of a week, and just so much stupid. Like, if they just stuck to Penguin's trying to get a nightclub going, and now he's got Butch at his side, clearly, you know, reshaped by Victor Zsasz, and you've got, you know, the Bruce Wayne Enterprises corruption, just stick with those. And then Jim Gordon, like, investigating stuff, like, clearly they set out for a show, and the stuff that works was not what they wanted to work, so they're just trying to keep everything. And it's bugging me, man.
Well, what they're trying to do is, like, the new 52 Red Hood and the Outlaws thing, which is I don't read it, so I don't know. But, like, leave that alone. I like the new, I like that Butch is back and he does his Butch things. I feel like they just threw the circus thing in there, like, in that episode, just to, like, introduce the fact that there would be a Robin at some point if they ever did this show for, like, an extended period of time. You know what I mean? Like, oh, we should, yeah. We should throw the Graysons in there and show them get together, and then those are Dick Grayson's parents, and then, you know, when Bruce grows up, he'll have this.
Yeah, I thought it was a nice touch, but I, once again, I'm with you. It was very useless to the story. It was kind of just a nice nod to the fact that, hey, this exists, this was their origin, is at least they got that right, kind of.
Well, I mean, and then, yeah, the Red Hood, the only part that I liked about that was, like I said, the Wayne thing, like Alfred and his friend. That was good.
Yeah, Alfred and Bruce have had a couple very strong episodes. We had Bruce challenging the board of Wayne Enterprises, and then you had, of course, them hiring Alfred's buddy to go in and, you know, figure out what does Bruce have, like, on us, what should we do about this, and so that story has me interested, because I thought, I was like, oh my goodness, if they kill off Alfred, well, Bruce Wayne never becomes Batman, just straight up. You can't kill him, but for a second, I was nervous that they would, just because with Gotham, I really don't know what they're trying to do at this point anymore. It's so silly.
Yeah, and then I was like, Fish stabs herself in the eye with a spoon, finally.
Oh, gosh.
It's yeah, over. It's over. She's not going to be gone anymore. And then all of a sudden, she... It's fine.
Talk about the doll maker here, Mike. You know,
I don't want to.
You don't want to talk about the doll maker?
Oh,
okay.
My God.
Well, I was more going to say, who is he in the DC universe? For the people who don't know, who is the doll maker, and why is this such a huge introduction, regardless of whether it's appropriate or not, into this show?
Yeah, I have no idea. I don't even really... I don't know why. So, yeah. He's new. He's the new... He's part of the new 52. That's all it is. Like, he's a new character. So I don't know. I missed all this. Like, he's not something that's from, like, old Batman stuff. He's a 40-year-old character.
Yeah.
They're shoving down your throat in the show.
Yeah, so from that perspective, I can kind of understand what they're doing in the sense of, okay, well, let's try to get somebody who's not so well-founded so that maybe we can do something interesting with him. I know that they mentioned him earlier in the season, if you remember during the, you know, Selina Kyle episode where there's somebody trying to, like, capture a bunch of kids that were on the street and, like, drugging them and stuff, and you had those weird, you know, he and she crime couple, and they said they were collecting people for the doll maker, and... Okay, so that's nice, but I don't care about this storyline. I don't really... There are very few storylines that I do care about that are going on right now. So we have all these characters that they've now introduced, and they said everything's going to be coming to fruition. There's a war coming. Okay, but you've so scattered everything and built up to nothing. It's almost like, who cares at this point?
I want to see where they're going. So what is this, 22 episodes?
The 22 episodes
right,
season.
So what, 5, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 5 episodes left. They got to get their craft together in these next 5 episodes because, like, they're starting to lose me. It really is. Like, as much as I love Batman, like, I'd rather read the comic books because they're just, you know, cohesive. They have this thing. It's called, you know, consistency and continuity that, you know, kind of sticks together. Except for the fact that, you know, all of Batman's villains just happen to escape from Arkham in jail all the time, but that's...
Yeah.
You can't permanently lock them up because then you don't have stories anymore.
Exactly, and plus everybody knows that, you know, supervillain prisons are the worst place to put supervillains because they all find a way to break out at some point. And, you know, the biggest thing, honestly, the one thing that just had me kind of rolling on the floor, just hysterical, was the fact that Barbara Keene was taking advice about how to get Bruce back from 2 kids. Like, how whacked out on drugs must she be? Like, we completely forgot about the fact that she was at her parents. We got nothing from that. She just went there, had that awkward scene. That was that. And now she's back trying to win back, you know, Jim from just completely stupid. Just this show has lost its way. So, Mike, kind of from these last 2 episodes, What would you give the scores for both The Blind Fortune Teller and this last week's episode?
So episode 16 gets a 6 out of 10. This past week is a 5 out of 10.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm going to go with, I thought the one with Jerome and everything with that was actually pretty solid, which is a shame that this week's episode sucks so bad. I'm going to actually go with a 7 for The Blind Fortune Teller, but this week's episode gets a 5.5. It was too disjointed, too crazy, too out there, just a lot of weird things happening with tonality of the show that just kind of had me bugging.
Garbage.
Yeah, it was trash.
Especially compared to the stuff that I'm going to talk about in the comic book section of this, like, it blows it out of the water.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff going on in the Batman comics right now.
Yeah.
So, moving from that to a show that is completely not trash, that has just finished up its miniseries, that I'm praying to God gets a season 2 at this point, Mike, Agent Carter. Oh my gosh, talk about a strong end to your season, man. Everything that we expected this show to be, it exceeded our expectations, and then some.
Yeah, I definitely prefer this show over Gotham, the last two episodes. Like, this is definitely it. This is what television should be. I don't know what else to say without, like, beating a dead horse. This show is great, and it has been great for all, you know, 7 weeks or 8 episodes of it, and it was definitely what ABC needed to fill in that spot for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yep, and it tied itself, it was very compartmentalized, but it tied itself in very nicely. So these last two episodes, of course, you had Snafu and Valediction, I believe, was the episode 8 title. And so what we saw in episode 7 was we get a good look at the Doctor. You know, they have figured out that, of course, Peggy Carter has been conducting her own investigation in Snafu, and they arrest her, but Dottie is getting away. And, you know, the Doctor has put his tricks on Chief Dooley, and a whole lot of good stuff going on there with that one. And, you know, I really enjoyed that episode in the sense that we got a side of Chief Dooley that we hadn't had yet, that I really appreciate. You know, he really did want to heal things with his family. We also got a different side to the Doctor. The fact that, you know what, this crazy Dr. Evchenko, who isn't Dr. Evchenko, ended up actually having a backstory, and he could use his power, his ability, his hypnosis things for good. There was just, you know, I almost felt bad that the guy's a villain. It's like, man, how'd this guy get caught up with Leviathan? Like, he could do so many good things with his ability, but just so much good stuff in that episode, man.
Yeah, that was good. You got to see the great side of Dooley, and then he jumped out of a window and exploded.
Yeah, we got
crazy.
We got a good. I like the big part with me about this episode is I like the fact that when Thompson and Sousa were in the elevator going to check out, you know, Agent Carter's claims, they said, "Do you believe her?" "Yep." "Do you believe her?" "After what I saw in Russia, yes, I do." Like, she fought for me. She could have easily just let me die. Like, if she was in on Leviathan, that would have been the time to have shown it. But no. Like, so that was a big character arc, specifically for Thompson, and the fact that he's this, you know, pompous and arrogant guy who turns out didn't have the backstory he tells everybody he does. And the fact that he now trusts Agent Carter and respects her and everything with that, just so good. And like you said, the jumping out of the window thing, it was so, you know, pun intended, explosive. But it was in the sense of, like, this is the rallying cry that you need for a penultimate episode of a season. Like, okay, you know what? The department's been divided. There's been a whole ton of stuff going on. Now we have our enemies. We have people to pursue. And everybody's united on the same front to go after Dottie Underwood and Dr. Evchenko.
Yeah, and then you had the gas. What was it? Item 17.
Item 17, which we find out in the next episode, was called Midnight Oil, creation of Howard Stark.
Oh, my God, that was nuts, especially because I saw the Kingsman.
Yes,
last week. Like, those two things kind of went together. Like, the way that they, that was, spoiler alert, they go together. If you've seen episode 7 of Agent Carter and you've seen the Kingsman, you know what I'm talking about. I don't want to spoil it because that the Kingsman hasn't been out for, you know, years or weeks even at this point. But that was, Snafu, great episode. Valediction was great, too. We get the reveal of who Dr. Evchenko actually is, Johann Fenoff.
Yes.
That's his real name.
Who is a Marvel Comics Captain America villain, and I love it. What a reveal.
Yeah, so we get that going. We get, like, the reveal of Item 17, like you said, Midnight Oil. We get the whole story of what happened in Finnau.
If the Battle of Finnau and why those guys didn't have a voice box, and we got that little bit of where Sousa got it into him and tried to kill Thompson, and he hit Agent Carter, and they had to knock him out. And the fact that he survived, you know, the final episode was very much Captain America centric, and it was very much about how had Captain America impacted Howard Stark and Peggy to the point that they had to move on from that, and kind of let him go. And that was really the big theme here. Try not to skip too many things. The radio scene was one for me that I really took me right back to Captain America: The First Avenger, where Peggy's trying to talk down Howard out of the plane. It took me right back to when she's talking to Steve over the radio. And of course, we had that awesome Captain America radio show in this episode again, but it just took me right back to that. Like, this is her chance to try to reconcile that situation. I just said, man, what an arc for her, all in the span of a year. And, you know, same thing with Howard, kind of learning, you know what, I can't bring Captain America back. He was my best creation, but I have to let him go. And just so much good stuff.
Yeah, we had Sousa showing that he's not an idiot, not that he was beforehand, but, they're talking, don't let him talk to you or you're dead. And then he comes around the corner and that guy, you know, Dr. Fenoff, or what's his name, Johann Fenoff was talking to him, trying to get him to focus, and he's twisting the ring, but it's not,
it's working.
He thinks it's working, but then he gets punched in the face.
Yep, yet another plot twist that just had you go, oh my gosh. Like, I thought he had him.
Sousa takes the cotton out. Yeah, man, it was great. That was good. Howard, like you said, that scene was just powerful because you had Howard, this butler, you know, Stark's butler, Jarvis, right on his butt with the jet, with the guns, ready to shoot him down if he had to. It was almost like the entire end of the first of Captain America.
Yep, very, very reminiscent of it. And, it just goes to show that the continuity of this show out of that movie was so strong that it just took you right back to it. You were emotionally engaged. The pacing was excellent. The acting was top notch again. The effects, of course, were good. Just so much to love about this episode. And, you know, of course, Dottie Underwood, we thought she was dead. Peggy, after a really good combat fight between the two of them, knocks her out of the window. And we see her landing on the plane. She's clearly cracked her skull, but she's not dead. So, you know, hoping for a season two there and hoping for some conclusion with that. They take Evchenko in. They don't let him talk. We'll get to the big cameo in a minute.
Well, I mean, and you had Peggy's finally gained the respect of the entire SSR now as well. She comes in, you know, there's a big standing ovation, and then the government people come in and they just go straight to Thompson.
Yep.
Like, good job, sir.
Yep, and I was kind of ticked that he didn't have his full character development and say, no, you know what, it's Agent Carter. But at the same time, it opened the door for her to say, I don't need their approval anymore. You know, I don't need to fight for it.
And, of course, he did give her kind of the look back, you know, like he looked over his shoulder and she just kind of was like, whatever, you know, just go with it. And he went, and Sousa, you know, made the comment, like, why don't you, you know, tell Harry Truman right now. And then that's when she said, like you just said, you know, I don't need you guys' approval. It's something that's not a big deal anymore.
Yeah.
And then we get Angie to come in and the penthouse from Stark given to them.
Yeah, there's a phone in every room.
What?
Which for that time, that would be a huge deal. Let's be honest. You have to put yourself into that time period. That would be a huge deal for them. Like the fact they'd have a phone.
And we get the Howard Stark is done, you know, trying to invent weapons and stuff like that. And maybe that kind of leads into, you know, the Iron Man story.
It was very reminiscent of Iron Man 3, actually, if you think about it, where Iron Man destroyed all of his armor. His dad kind of went through the same arc of a character of, yeah, you know what, I need to not be defined by these things anymore. These things are something different. So very similar character arcs. And, you know, I like the fact that when Sousa asked out Agent Carter, which we all could see that coming, you know, she didn't turn him down. She just said, I'm busy, and she did have other plans. She was moving into a new place. Like, so that was legitimate. But I think for her that was a big moment in that she can move on from, Steve, because we see her go and pour out the blood, and she said, you know, goodbye, my darling. And, like, just what a touching scene for her, like, coming full circle this season and everything that she's had to deal with. That was absolutely huge. And just, you know, the stakes and everything going on with that. This show truly was special. In its 8 episodes, 7 weeks, this was a special show.
Yeah, it definitely was great. And like we said at the beginning, it was going to change the way kind of the way people looked at women in, like, comic books and stuff. Not that people looking down on them. I mean, we have Lady Thor. We've had Scarlett Johansson as Black Widow in, like, several Marvel movies now. But, like, this is a period piece that shows how women kind of became strong in those times.
Yeah,
in the late 40s and early 50s.
And the thing that I loved about the radio show contrasted with, you know, Betty Carver, this damsel in distress, it was really never like that, but that's how they wanted to portray it. Like, that's how the radio saw it, and that's how everybody saw it, was that, oh, you know, Peggy Carter was there alongside him, but she really didn't do anything. But the reality was she did, and they looked down on her just because she was a woman. And I loved that contrast that reminded you of that in the last episode of, here's Betty Carver and here's Peggy Carter. Like, they're very different people, the damsel in distress versus the actual strong woman. You know, so a lot of people may not have liked that. I thought it was a nice touch. I thought it was excellent and very well done.
Mm-hmm. And then
the big thing at the end that just is having everyone begging for a season two. We get Toby Jones back as Arnim Zola in the same cell as Dr. Fenoff, and I lost I went bonkers. Like, I did not see that coming. But that essentially confirmed that was where the Winter Soldier program arc began. Because if everybody knows, the Winter Soldier was a Russian creation at the hands of Hydra, you know, just, oh my gosh. And the way that he spoke and just the dimly lit cell, and what a scene and what a way to cap off the season and potentially lead into a second season with Arnim freaking Zola coming in.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing. I just started. I was like, "Oh well, hail Hydra!"
Yeah.
So like, we get that going. We get he's like, Fedoff has that thing on his face, the almost Hannibal Lecter-esque mask, but like a muzzle for humans, so he can't like talk, and you know, try and hypnotize people. So Zola's like, "Here's a pen and paper, buddy. We can communicate this way."
Yep, and thus begins Hydra infiltrating S.H.I.E.L.D. through Arnim Zola and everything else, and just, oh my gosh, the possibilities are endless. What a Winter Soldier touch, though. Just, oh my gosh. So good. I'm hoping for a season two. So, Mike, let's do this. Since this was the end of the season, let's rate kind of these last two episodes, and then what would you give the entire series as a whole?
I'm giving both of these episodes, the last episode is a 10. There's no if, ands, or buts about it. The previous episode, the penultimate episode, I would say like a 8.5, 9. We'll go with 9. And then the series as a whole is a 9.5 out of 10. It was great. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just the fact that I didn't want to give it a perfect score is why it doesn't have one.
Yeah, it was not perfect. There were some character arcs that, you know, Leviathan never really got built up outside of these two main characters. So if I was going to say the show could have done one more thing, it would have been give us the scope of Leviathan. They never really did that, you know, other than the guys who couldn't talk and Dr. Fenoff and, you know, Dottie. We didn't really see Leviathan. But, you know, for the second to last episode, for Snafu, I'm going to give that one a solid 9. I thought that one was really good. Once again, there could have been some things they did a little bit differently. And I thought that how violent that last scene was, like, don't get me wrong, you needed to portray what this stuff could do, but I thought it was a little bit beyond what the show had done as far as violence, having all, like, showing the carnage in there. That was a little bit beyond it, so I'm marking it down for that, as far as the tone it had set. But the last episode, I'm with you, I'm giving it a 10, because everything kind of wrapped up, everything came to fruition, and it set up a potential second season. But if you want to, you could also leave it off there. Like, if they don't have a second season, then we know that's where the Winter Soldier program started, and you can just carry it on through to Captain America, the Winter Soldier. As far as the series goes, I'm right there with you. 9.5 out of 10. My one big, like I said, my one thing that would keep it from being a 10 was Leviathan never really got introduced into the scope of it. Like, we know how big Hydra is. Is Leviathan just as big, or are they really underground, or is it just these four people? You know, I wish they could have done a better job establishing that. But overall, man, what a success. What a great show. And Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. starting back next week with our Inhuman storyline. It's going to be equally large in scope and for the future of the Marvel Universe. I'm excited for that one.
Yeah, you got that little promo there at the end of Agent Carter where it's like, there's something inside me, something inhuman.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, Christ.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pun, but it wasn't in your face. Like, I mean, it's legitimate. Like, what she has is not, it's not human. It's very inhuman. And, you know, we saw the poster where Reyna's very much concealed. She's, her appearance changed a ton when she got her transformation. We don't really know what her abilities are or what she really looks like at this point, but she definitely has some weird skin going on, whereas Skye kind of looks normal. So, you know, I'm expecting a lot of this. What they used to do with the X-Men and the mutants was like, hey, some mutants aren't as lucky and look really weird, whereas,
Colossus.
You know, yeah, like, well, Colossus, you know, he only looks weird at certain times. I'm thinking more like Mystique. Like, think about in the X-Men
Beast.
Movies. Yep, Beast. You know, the entire Morlocks culture from the X-Men comics, the ton of that stuff really resonated with me there. And plus we had the dude with no eyes, like, that we saw at the end of the first part of the season. And there's going to be a ton of other Inhumans being introduced in these next three episodes to start it off from what we know already. So it's going to be good times, man. Going to be good times.
Yeah, that's definitely something to look forward to next Tuesday. March the 3rd.
Yes. So, back to the comics, man. We've been referencing them a lot of storylines going on. What have you been reading these last couple weeks, Mike?
All right, so I've continued to read The Watchmen, or Watchmen, and from what I know about the book compared to the movie, like, they did pretty well so far. I'm not all the way done with them in, like, chapter 5 or 6 of Watchmen, but the parts, I can see the pictures that they pulled from the movie, the scenes that they pulled from that book to put in the movie. So I think they did a pretty good job, in my opinion, so far. We'll see what happens when I get to the end. Continuing to read Batman, or Future's End. I almost skipped what I wanted to talk about. Future's End is still going strong. We got Superman battling Brainiac the last couple issues. Lois Lane realizes that the real Superman is back. She's like, oh my God, where have you been? You know, recovering. And she's like, from what? And he said, the war. Because, you know, there was the war between Earth 2 and Earth 1 and Apocalypse. And Earth 0 and Earth 2 and Apocalypse.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with the X-Men Apocalypse.
Yes, Apocalypse with a different spelling.
And then she's like, oh, but Batman. He's like, don't say that name around me. So Kal-El's all upset with Batman. We have the whole brother eye thing starting to, I think, interface with Brainiac a little bit, because Mr. Terrific is all, you know, like, I've spoken to God and blah, blah, blah. There's all that thing. And Bruce Wayne Batman is there trying to fight it, while Terry McGinnis Batman is off trying to fight the stuff that he brought back with him from the future as that has come back to life from, you know, the first issue or whatever, which is starting to get kind of, it's starting to come full circle now as we're into the last, like, 9 or 10 issues before the new solicitations in May. Then I read Deathstroke number 5, which was cool. We had Deathstroke, Harley Quinn, and Batman kind of fighting, where Batman doesn't know that Deathstroke's in town because he's trying to find his son Jericho and his daughter Rose to keep them away from his father, and that whole storyline with how he got young. I don't know. He says that he sucks fighting with two eyes because he's used to having one eye, and now that he's young again, he has two. Read that book. It's kind of convoluted. It's hard to explain.
Yes.
Then I read Batman number 39, which was Endgame Part 5. Gotham City is still stuck in, like, this absolute fit of rage and stuff. This seems to be, like, a recurring theme in television and movies lately. See Agent Carter in The Kingsman.
Yes.
Joker has released a virus You know, we've talked about that, where it doesn't, there's no way for it to decompose because it has some regenerative strain in it. So when they think they found a cure, it just regenerates and becomes stronger, but the same virus. So it's causing all the people in Gotham to just kind of go, you know, crazy and turn into the Joker and laugh and do all this stuff. They find out that all this stuff has come from the Joker's blood in his spine. He's one of these Dysonian men or whatever, where he lives forever. So this is the crazy Joker backstory that everybody should read. That's this six story arc is amazing. So I'm on part five. Part six will come out at the end of March, and then that'll be the end of Endgame. But the Batman has to go talk to the Court of Owls, who were there to found Gotham and stuff, and he's trying to figure out if the Joker's actually been around all this time, or if they're just all making this up, and they, you know, he genetically synthesized this thing whatsoever. He has to gather his rogues gallery and all of the Bat family to try and fight the Joker to get to his spine to put a needle in there and pull out whatever liquid this is that caused this virus to happen.
Oh my goodness, that's intense.
So, yeah, it's getting pretty crazy. Then there's all the backup stories, which are nuts, where the Joker visited all these people that are Arkham inmates and told them all different stories about his life and how he came to be and how he chose them to tell his story. But all of the stories were fake because the doctor that treated all of them in Arkham wrote this tell-all book about the Joker, and he told her some false story because he was actually the guy that, his name was Eric whatever, and he used to work in Gotham when they cut off his face. There's a whole, like, you gotta read all this stuff. This is the, what is it, Snyder and
Snyder and Capullo, I believe. I think Capullo's writing these.
Yeah, these guys are doing the Lord's work with Batman. It's like the complete opposite of the last few episodes of Gotham.
Yes.
Like, if you read books, go pick up, even if it's just the six issues, like the Batman Endgame arc, just go read that. It's great. I'm going to pick up all their backup stories and stuff too, or like all the backlog of it, going back to 2011, I think they started this run, and probably the night of the Court of Owls stuff, because I had no idea what was going on when they showed up at the end of the last two books. I was like, what is this? Who are these people with the masks on that live underneath Gotham City?
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, I've heard nothing but great things about Capullo's drawings, and, of course, Snyder, as a writer, has been top-notch for Batman. He's taken him different places, you know, kind of like you've been saying. It's very different than some of his old-school stuff, but at the same time, it's good to breathe new life into a character and kind of getting all this stuff going on.
This is what comic book writing should be. Like, it's just amazing.
Yep, and it's stuff like this, and that's why Batman is the most popular DC character in the world, you know, him and Superman, because good writers breed good results, which breed good storylines for good TV and good movies.
Yeah.
This is how it should be done.
Yeah, so that's what's going on in the DC world for me, but I have read some Marvel stuff since we last spoke.
Yes, what's going on in your Marvel books, Mike?
I have the Star Wars books now, so Darth Vader has had two issues out. And it is amazing. I love it. It's like his little behind the scenes. So the Death Star's blown up. Emperor Palpatine's kind of putting all the blame on Darth Vader for not crushing the rebellion when he had the chance. Obviously all of this stuff is happening between, Star Wars A New Hope, so episode 4, and, The Empire Strikes Back, episode 5. So that's happened. The Death Star's blown up. Emperor Palpatine's mad at Vader for not killing them all when they were on the Death Star the first time, when he killed Obi-Wan. He should have taken care of it. But now Darth Vader is going through and doing all these tasks for the Emperor, like going to visit Jabba the Hutt and securing supply routes and stuff like that for the Outer Rim territories. But he's also working in the background trying to find out who Luke Skywalker is and why it is. Why did he have a lightsaber, and what training does he have? Those tie into the actual Star Wars book that Marvel's released that I've been reading as well. That only has a couple issues out. That's been great, and I think they're going to tie that into Princess Leia when that starts in the next week or so.
Yeah, I've been hearing that all these stories are going to be running concurrent with each other. So basically, if you want to know the full story, follow all of them. Go and pick these up now. Like, I've been hearing, you know, I read a piece of the Darth Vader one. I didn't read the whole thing because, you know, people can only post so many panels online for free. And I wasn't even able to pick it up because it was sold out of my local store. I could not pick up Darth Vader. It's that good. Like, honestly, Marvel writing these books has been outstanding. And the fact that, you know, Disney's in control and they can, you know, shape it into their universe and just everything that's going on with it, it's stellar. It's really good.
No, it looks, the story's great. And the art is what you would believe it to, like, it matches up great with, you know, the movies that we know from Star Wars. Like, there's nothing that's like, oh, I don't know what that is. What did they draw there? You know what I mean? Like, the characters are drawn the way that they should be drawn, or the way that they look in the, you know, action figures or the video games, or, like I said, the movies, or wherever they've been in the past. The characters look spot on.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, what else did you read, Mike? Was that pretty much your Marvel coup for the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, well, I had the Guardians of the Galaxy Black Vortex thing, but I'm still not sure what's going on with that, because I think they've left that out of my pull box for the last couple of weeks. So I need to call my store and figure out what's going on there.
Yes, that would be good. You know, as far as the other Marvel books that I've been keeping up with the last couple of weeks, we had the Ant-Man prequel number one for the movie, which was huge. And we got some interesting things going on with Hank Pym being, you know, essentially contracted by S.H.I.E.L.D. To go and do some missions for him back in the day, for them back in the day. And, like, Peggy Carter shows up in this book, and, you know, Howard Stark is in this book as well. So a good storyline for Hank Pym. I don't want to spoil too much of it, but definitely go and check out all the prequel comics that are going to tie into the films. They're incredibly important, and they help provide backstory, is essentially why you need them at this point. You know, so that's something big. And then I also read the epilogue, the epilogue to the Spider-Verse, where Superior Spider-Man fights the Amazing Spider-Man, and that was just an amazing book. A lot of cool stuff going on there, a lot of people going back, and then the one I did read this week was Spider-Gwen, number one, because I was very interested in that character. I loved it. I like what they're doing with it. Go pick it up, especially if you're looking for good new female superheroes to follow. That would be one to follow. Go follow Spider-Gwen. It's essentially, in her universe, Peter Parker died instead of Gwen Stacy, and she got bitten by the spider, so everything's reversed. Her dad knows that she is Spider-Man. And so just tons of good things going on there as well. And they're getting ready for the Secret Wars Battle Worlds continuing. You're going to see a lot of that going on in their story arcs. And so tons of good things going on in the Marvel Universe, getting ready for the Secret Wars story. And Howard the Duck, by the way, made an appearance in the final issue of She-Hulk, in She-Hulk number 12. So I thought that one was pretty funny. Howard the Duck's just moving. Oh, hey, Jessica, how you doing? Oh, hi, Howard. You know, what are you doing? Oh, I'm going to be doing some private investigating work. Nice, awesome, cool. Good to see you, yeah, Howard.
That sets up his book that's coming out at the beginning of March here.
Yup, just hilarious stuff. Enjoying that one as well. So I probably read some other things a couple weeks ago, but I'm just not remembering them right now. I know Moon Knight had another issue that I can't remember what happened in it. Just Moon Knight's awesome. I love the heck out of him. I love Batman killing people, basically. So that's good. And just so much going on right now.
Yeah, comics. They just released the hardcover version of the Axis storyline. So if you're out there looking for it like me and didn't get a chance to read that whole arc, it is available in hardcover form. Of course, it's like $50, but it's a little pricey, but I'm sure there'll be a trade for it pretty soon. But I just thought I'd put that out there because we talked about Axis a lot for those, you know, 12 weeks that it was active.
Yes, yes. And as people could probably tell, well, David, you're not talking as much about comics since the event ended. Yeah, I'm trying to recover from Axis. I'm just trying to get by, you know. I needed a break. It needed a break from Axis.
I'm going to need to take a break and breathe after this Batman thing is over.
Yeah, I was going to say, Future's End isn't quite as exhausting. Unless you're following all of the arcs leading up to Convergence, then in that case, you're probably just, you know, bleeding at the ears by now. But a lot of stuff, a lot of good things going on. And, you know, we've been talking about a lot about the comics, a lot about the good things where all this stuff is based. But we're going to kind of end our show. We got some news in the entertainment side of things, the movies, the TV shows, all that good stuff.
There's one video game note that I think we should talk about. But we'll add that on at the end of all the stuff.
Yes, we will. We'll end that. We'll do that in the non-comic book portion of things.
No. I'm talking about the Batman game.
Batman game. You know what? Yes, Mike. You know what? This would probably be the best time to talk about that because we are going to talk about a potentially other gritty thing here. So, Mike, let's update the folks. What's going on with the new Batman game?
So, Batman Arkham Knight. You know, they've released their new trailer a few days ago. And at the end of the trailer, you get this nice big, or at the beginning, really, rated M for mature. So that's kind of a big deal for video games. I'm pretty sure I'm double checking my facts here because Arkham City, I want to make sure it was a teen video game, like a rating T. Where's the dang ratings? But these.
I think you're right about that, Mike. I think that's what caused such a big stir is that Batman is all of a sudden going to be rated M for mature. They've refused to tame the storyline in any way to make it more appeasing to a wider audience. They said, this is what we want to tell, and this is what we're going to do.
No, well, here's the deal. Like, the violence is the violence. Like, it's going to be violent, regardless of if it was a mature game or a teen game or PG, whatever. Batman has to fight people. He's punching people in the face and stuff. In the other games, he'd break people's limbs and things like that in order to, you know, stop them from being aggressive towards him. But, like, the whole premise of this game is the Scarecrow is trying to round up the Rogues Gallery to kill Batman. I mean, that was the same thing in Arkham Origins, where they were hired assassins to kill Batman. But this is the Scarecrow now, is one of the main villains in this game. So we're going to see a lot of fear toxin, a lot of hallucinations and stuff. I think that's one of the reasons why it got an M rating as well, because they can consider that drug use, whether it's intentional or unintentional. But I really think we'll see what happens in June. Obviously, it's a little under 4 months from being released. It comes out June 2nd, I believe. So right at the beginning of the summer, we'll see what the M rating is really all about.
Yes, truth will be told when the game comes out. We'll finally know what's going on with all of that. So another thing that we're looking at and could potentially get a higher or, you know, a more intense rating than most movies in its category is the Deadpool movie, Mike. You know, there hasn't been a whole lot of updates on what it's going to be rated or anything. It comes out in about a year. But we did get some casting news finally, Mike. I don't know if you've heard about any of this or read about any of this, but we had confirmation that Colossus might be in the movie, but it's not going to be the guy who played him the last time, Daniel Cudmore, who I thought was excellent as Colossus and wish he would have had more to do. But we do know that Deadpool is going to have a love interest, and it is Morena Baccarin, who is currently playing Dr. Leslie Tompkins on Gotham. She's going to be in the Deadpool movie. Most people know her from a variety of things. She's been mostly known for Homeland. That was the big one. She was also in V. She was in Serenity. But Homeland is where she really got her stuff. And then, you know, from the world of fighting, Mike, Gina Carano is going to be Angel Dust, who's a key Morlock in the X-Men universe.
Oh, that's pretty cool. I mean, I don't know how much of a fighter she was. She was a fighter for a little while, and then she just kind of fell off the face of the earth. She was supposed to be Ronda Rousey before Ronda Rousey was there. But then she was in a couple movies. She was also in American Gladiators reboot that they did with Hulk Hogan.
Yes. That. Yes. So, you know, she's been in some good action films. I like her. You know what? I think she looks the part. I wish someone like her, I think, would have been good for Wonder Woman if she had more acting experience. She'd have probably been the front runner for me because she's already built. You know, what do you think of Morena Baccarin getting the love interest for Deadpool? She does not have a character name yet, but we just know that she's going to be the love interest of this quirky psychopath.
Yeah, that's where does that tie into, like, the books and stuff, though? Like, what is...
Well, Deadpool has had several love interests. Like, right now, he just got married to somebody who actually loves the psychopath side of Deadpool. Now, this script was written, if it's the same script that they had a couple years ago, then this is going to be before Deadpool got married. So there's a ton of guesses about who this could be. The odds, their thought is that this is going to be somebody who has no idea who Deadpool actually is, and that she falls in love with Wade Wilson, having no clue that he's actually like this crazy guy who hears voices in his head, which I think would be hilarious.
That is pretty funny. I get behind that then.
Yeah, I'll get behind that. And then, of course, you know, we mentioned that there's going to be humor in this movie. Like, the violence will probably get it an R rating, I hope. They could tone it down to PG-13. And Deadpool likes to cuss, too, so it could get an R rating for F-words. But T.J. Miller, the comic T.J. Miller, he was the voice of one of the characters in Big Hero 6 that won an Academy Award. He's going to be playing an untitled part in this, as well as Ed Skrein, who will be in this film. Something that I'm kind of curious about. I don't really know much about the guy. He's been in The Transporter. He's been in The Sweeney. So movies that I'm not 100% familiar with, but you know what? Sometimes it's not a bad thing. He looks like he could play a villain. He's got kind of a darker tone to him as far as like the roles that he's played and the characters that he's portrayed. So I'm excited. I continue to be really excited for this Deadpool movie, and I can't wait for another year. Ryan Reynolds tweeted out a picture of himself with the Deadpool mask in its earliest stages, as they're, you know, starting to do the pre-production on it. And it looks like Deadpool. Like, if this is what Deadpool looks like, I'm on board, I'm pumped, I'm ready. Bring me to February of 2016.
Yeah, that's going to be big. I'm looking forward to it as well. Like, Deadpool is pretty funny. I'm kind of sick of seeing him cosplayed, though, but I'm sure that'll never go away.
And it's only going to get worse now, Mike, because they're getting a movie about him.
I don't know how much worse it could get. There's like a million. Yeah, if you go, like, so Las Vegas Comic Con is here in June. There will probably be about 15 to 20 people dressed as that because it's a rather small place. But then when in April we're getting a Wizard World here in Vegas, I'm anticipating 300 Deadpools.
Yeah.
At least. Not to mention a bunch of people dressed up as Walking Dead characters, but that's neither here nor there.
Yes. So, you know, kind of keeping it in the Fox universe, we've had a lot of casting for X-Men Apocalypse also coming out next year. Bryan Singer had said he wanted to bring Nightcrawler back, and that's exactly what he's done. He's cast Cody Smit-McPhee as Kurt Wagner Nightcrawler for the movie next year. Now, if you aren't familiar with the name, he's a very young actor. He's 21, I believe, going to turn 21 this year. He was in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes last year. He was in Romeo and Juliet. He was in Young Ones, The Congress. He was in, let's see, a couple of other interesting movies here. Yeah, he's got a pretty good resume, 25 films already on his resume for this young star. So I'm excited. I love Nightcrawler, and I'm wondering if they're going to kind of hint to the fact that, you know, he's Mystique's kid, or if they're even going to keep that continuity for this movie.
Yeah, but Nightcrawler is one of my favorite X-Men growing up from the cartoon and, you know, in the video games and stuff that I had when I was younger. So the fact that he's going to continue to be in, like, in the X-Men movies is going to be great. Like, the one that he was in was like, eh.
But yeah, his role in X-Men 2 was awesome. But, you know, I'm with you. I think that they can do so many good things with Nightcrawler, surrounded by a young Jean Grey, you know, a younger version of Cyclops, a younger version of Storm. We've got a lot of those good things going on. It's rumored that old Magneto will be returning in this film. You know, you've got Oscar Isaac, who's going to be Apocalypse. You know, you've got Charles Xavier coming back, James McAvoy. Nicholas Holt is confirmed to be Beast. Myra McTaggart from X-Men First Class, she's going to be back as well. And Quicksilver, our buddy Quicksilver. Evan Peters is going to be in this film again. So it's already feeling kind of loaded, but you know what? Some of these people are going to have to turn into Horsemen of the Apocalypse. So you have this opportunity to bring in a second cast and tie them all together. So there's no confirmation yet that Hugh Jackman's going to be in it, but we know he's probably going to be in it. So just looking for more.
Does the movie say X-Men in the title?
It does.
Yeah, he'll be in it.
He'll be in it. So that's going to be good. I'm excited. You know what? I think the kid's going to be good. Probably have a different take on it than, you know, the original Nightcrawler did. So it's going to be good. I'm pumped.
Yeah, I'm excited, especially after Days of Future Past. Like, I was excited for another X-Men movie, and then when we got the, you know, the little teaser at the end of Apocalypse, I was pumped up. So this is good. This is very good.
Yeah, very solid. It's going to be a big movie. I'm not quite sure where they go from here after Apocalypse, because he's kind of their biggest bad guy, but we shall see. And you know what, Mike? We did some casting news a while back that we talked about, and there was a photo released, you know, straight from the makers of Batman v Superman, of Aquaman. Now, there are tons of photos that people say broke the internet of Kim Kardashian and likewise. Well, this broke the nerd world. Because there are so many varying opinions on this picture of Jason Momoa as Aquaman. Mike, what do you think of this picture? I know it's a little bit older at this point now, but, you know, you've had a bit of time to sit on it now, and what are your thoughts?
Well, I see the picture. You know what I mean? Like, I look at Jason Momoa and the way that his hair is and his beard and stuff looks, it points a lot to Khal Drogo. And then you kind of see his tribal tattoo. Or was that his, like, I guess his armor or something? It looked like a tribal tattoo.
It's a tribal tattoo. That's exactly what it is. It's part of his skin. Like, it's not part of the armor.
So, like, what? You know, what is it, to Unite the Seven or whatever? I don't know Aquaman's backstory because I was never really interested in it. I might go see the movie because Jason Momoa is cool.
Yeah, I mean, Aquaman doesn't even have that big of a part in Batman versus Superman, from what I understand. But it's...
Look, that Aquaman looks way more badass than any other Aquaman in, like, green underwear and an orange fish suit, okay?
Yeah.
It looks like a giant goldfish wearing underpants with blonde hair.
Yeah. See, this is the thing. This is where I stand. Does he look badass? Yes. If I have showed this picture to a few people who didn't know that this picture existed, and I said, who is this? And none of them knew it was Aquaman. That is my one complaint, is you can't look at him and say, this is Aquaman. He's a cool...
I think that's a good thing.
He's a cool-looking fish dude. It's going to redefine Aquaman. And I know that, you know, listening to people who do know a lot about Aquaman's backstory, the one problem that they have is that he's not blonde. They could care less about how that blonde hair actually looks, but there's something significant to Aquaman's backstory in the fact that he needs to have blonde hair. You know, he's the king of Atlantis.
Blonde hair, blue-eyed, white boy, fish man that lives under the water.
Right, right. And there's something about Atlanteans, though, and, like, the fact that he has blonde hair, like, I guess causes some stirring in Atlantis. I'm not going to pretend to be an Aquaman expert. I don't know enough about Aquaman, but I know that when I think of Aquaman, and there is some signs that he might be wearing green pants with that very rusted, armory look. Now, and I'd be okay with that. Like, give me something. Like, I guess that's my big thing. And where it's, I don't dislike the picture. I think it looks awesome. Just for me, when I'm going to a movie based on a certain source material, a certain artistry, I want to be able to identify who that is based on looking at them in their suit.
I mean, the only reason we knew Superman was Superman and the Man of Steel is because he had the S on his chest, but the rest of it looked like crap.
Yeah, and they color corrected it way too much. Gray filter, grittiness, everybody's had their say about Man of Steel. And, you know, from what I've heard, people who have been on set and seen him, they said that this isn't even actually what the suit looks like as far as color. They said it's clearly been color corrected to distort some of the actual colors. You could see some orange tint on his wrist armor and his, you know, his arms. So maybe there is some orange in this suit, but either way, I think it looks it's a cool picture. I mean, he's going to make me have nightmares, like, if I had to fight the guy. But I'm with you. It's almost like they took Khal Drogo from Game of Thrones and said, okay, Khal Drogo as Aquaman. Like, let's just go with it.
Because Khal Drogo likes the iron chair.
Yeah. So there's a lot
Aquaman
to like about
sits
this.
On the throne.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I'm very much holding any judgments until I actually see the movie, because I will go see it. I am curious about what this movie holds, and it's coming out in just a little bit over a year. We should probably be seeing a trailer come summer for what this movie has to offer.
Yeah, hopefully.
All right, so kind of to wind things down, we got just a couple other pieces of quick news here. An Avengers poster came out this past week. It is the official theatrical poster. Tons of stuff going on. It's a lot to take in. There's Ultron bots everywhere. You got Quicksilver, you got Scarlet Witch, you got Ultron, you got the Vision kind of in the back there, buildings flying apart, and of course you got Iron Man and Captain America at the center with Hulk, and a lot going on. But really, what we're going to talk about is what's in the fine print, Mike. There have been some rumors and things that had floated around, and then some stuff that we hadn't really quite heard about yet. Here in the starring category, we have Anthony Mackie, also known as, you know, a.k.a. Falcon. He's playing, you know, Sam Wilson, Falcon. Haley Atwell, Agent Carter. Idris Elba, Heimdall, and Stellan Skarsgård, Dr. Erik Selvig. These are people who we have not seen a single shot of them on set. We've heard rumors that a couple of them had been on set, and Idris Elba kind of leaked that he was in the movie and, you know, made a few people angry about it, but apparently he didn't know that this was supposed to be a secret. But anyways, these are some things that are very exciting, because it's like, how do they fit into the story that we've seen in the trailers? How do they fit into everything that's going on in this film? So let's start with Anthony Mackie's Falcon. Mike, what do you think they're going to do with Falcon coming out of Captain America the Winter Soldier leading into Civil War? How do you see him fitting into the Avengers Age of Ultron storyline?
I really have no idea, but I feel like a lot of this stuff, like, is going to go kind of like how they did with Agent Carter, where it's like, quote-unquote, archived footage, or like it's stuff that they are seeing, or like, oh, well, remember when we talked to that guy and it's like a flashback or whatever? Not saying that they do like a lot of flashbacks, but there's like, oh, well, you know, me and Sam, and then it cuts to them, like, he's telling a story about what him and Sam were doing, him being Captain America, or, you know, anybody else that's in the Avengers, or, that's what I feel like a lot of this is gonna be. It's like, oh, well, obviously, if Thor's in the movie and he's moving back and forth between Asgard and Earth, you need Heimdall, like, it makes sense for him to be there.
Right, we finally get to see his world. He doesn't just appear on the top of an airplane. As cool as that was, and as awesome as that was, we might actually get to see Asgard in an Avengers film.
Yeah, but, like, I don't know what you could do with Falcon. Like, what is Falcon's purpose at this point? He's not really an Avenger.
No, and he hasn't been indoctrinated into it. Like, he has no direct connections to anybody else in the Avengers universe. Like, Don Cheadle being there as part of the Ultron project makes sense. He's Tony Stark's buddy. Tony Stark's creating Ultron. You know, if it's a military thing, he's in the military. So he makes sense to be there. Anthony Mackie, I'm almost wondering if this is kind of their way of saying, okay, we don't want to have too much happen without understanding that there is a Winter Soldier Civil War element being set up here. Like, there's been some rumors that he may appear at the end and help Captain America form his own team of, like, you know, New Avengers or whatever, or Secret Avengers, which is entirely possible. I see this as, if you go right from where the Winter Soldier left off, Falcon and Captain America were looking for Bucky Barnes, the Winter Soldier. I think you could see him at the beginning, and I think you might have him kind of come in the middle. Like, he's going to go continue looking for the Winter Soldier while Steve is fighting off Ultron and bots, you know, continuing along that. That's where I see this making the most sense. And then him appearing at the end kind of as like a through line in and out of the story. But only really significant to Captain America, not so much significant to the Ultron fight. Because he hasn't been in any of the action scenes that we've seen. Like, if he's there, he's very well hidden. And so, you know, Haley Atwell's Agent Carter, there's been rumors of some time travel involved. Like, that's the best I can do. And maybe there's a flashback scene. We have that old scene, you know, Mike, from the trailer. Remember, we saw Captain America in his army attire, in what appeared to be like a ballroom dance. Maybe it's a vision that he has and she's in it. Like, I think that'd be really cool, good character development from him.
The dream of him getting that dance with Peggy that he talked about in the first movie, that would make sense.
Yep, finally getting that dance. And then Stellan Skarsgård, we already know that Loki's scepter is in this movie. Well, who's going to be a bigger expert on the scepter than the guy who was possessed by it, that, you know, studied it, that created the machine to open the portal, you know, involving that gem, that Infinity Stone. So there's these are big things. Like, this just adds to the story of, like, okay, so they're actually there's going to be some story in this. And, you know, say, like, Cobie Smulders, we already knew, was in it as Agent Hill, but we haven't seen her in anything. So what role does she play? They've said that this movie is going to probably be around 2 hours and 40 minutes. So there's a ton of character stuff, a ton of action that's going to happen. And Joss Whedon came out this week and basically said, yeah, the last battle is something that's never been seen in a superhero movie or an Avengers Marvel movie to date. Like, it's never been done. The scope and the insanity, and I'm just like, oh, please get here soon. Like, May 1st comes.
Yeah, we only got to wait about 2 more months, so.
Yep, 2 more months as of probably the time that this posts on YouTube. It'll be 2 months away, so that's going to be awesome. And kind of along the same lines, Robert Downey Jr. Tweeted out a picture and posted on his Facebook page saying, hey, here's a picture of me. So here's some promotional art, and the rest of the images of the people that have come out have been officially released. But it's interesting. He says there's a big announcement coming next Wednesday, you know, the first week of March. He didn't say what it was, but there's a big announcement coming. I don't even have a speculation for what this could be. Spider-Man casting, maybe? It's right around the time that they're going to start filming here soon, so could we get our Spider-Man cast?
Or Iron Man 4.
Yeah, that's the other thought. It's like, okay, maybe there's an Iron Man 4 going on with this. I'm speechless at this point. I don't even know. Like, I'm... Every time Marvel has a special announcement coming, they exceed our expectations. So I'm excited. I hope that it's Spider-Man casting or Iron Man 4, a potentially Civil War tie-in in some way. Like, hey, this is a Civil War tie-in movie. You know, if you want to know Tony Stark's full backstory, because we don't want to take away from Captain America too much, go see Iron Man 4.
Yeah, that would be, that'd be something else.
That would be another way to redefine cinematic history. Hey, to get the full story of Civil War, you have to go see both movies.
Yeah, that would be ridiculous, though, I feel like.
Yeah, yes, definitely. So, you know, I think that's about it, Mike. We've covered a ton on the show this week. We've had a lot of stuff to talk about over these last couple weeks. But, you know, I've some news that happened as we're recording this a little bit earlier on in the day. So we're going to date the show a little bit. You know, it's February 27th. Leonard Nimoy passed away today, the famous actor who portrayed Spock on the big screen. He was 83 years old, and, you know, talk about a guy who completely defined a generation of sci-fi, of nerddom, of you know, Vulcan, everything. Like, he was part of that integration of Star Trek and sci-fi from Gene Roddenberry's creations. And, you know, I felt it would be completely terrible to overlook the significance of Leonard Nimoy as this show is happening on, you know, the day of his passing. Really sad to hear about that. Our thoughts and prayers go out to his family. But, man, what a guy who has been so involved in the nerd and action and sci-fi genre throughout his life, and an amazing stage actor as well.
Yeah, he's done it all, Leonard Nimoy. You see him in the commercials. You would see him, you know, obviously if you have the old Star Trek stuff, he's in the new Star Trek movies.
Yeah, he voiced Sentinel Prime in Transformers Dark of the Moon.
Yeah, he is the guy. When people think of, you know, quote unquote nerd culture, nerddom, like you said, David, like, he is one of the people that you think of first, because he's, you know, the original Star Trek show has been off the air for what?
Yeah, 50 years there, I believe.
A long time.
The 50th anniversary, I think, is next year.
He's the guy. Like, people remember him and William Shatner.
Yep.
How many other people do you remember from that stuff that haven't, like, without them being, like, guests on Family Guy or something else? Like, but those two guys, like, Leonard Nimoy and William Shatner, are the Star Trek people. And, you know, Leonard Nimoy passing, I mean, he lived a great life, 83 years young. Like you said, thoughts and prayers to his family and friends. And, you know, now, who's our new, what's the new kid's name,
Zachary Quinto.
Yeah, yeah. Ball's in your court now, Zach.
Yep.
He's got to carry that character now for the next 40 years.
Yeah. Yeah, no pressure or anything. You're only following in the footsteps of Leonard Nimoy. So as we throw up the Vulcan sign for peace, live long and prosper, to everybody who's viewing us, you know, thank you again for tuning into episode 18, Plot Twist. There's been a ton of stuff that happened, a ton of unexpected things in our shows, in our comics, in our casting news and otherwise. But we just want to wish all of you a great weekend, a great week. Check out our YouTube, Mad Nerds AZNV, as well as Mike's YouTube, at Mike is the Hat, because we've done some Let's Plays of Destiny. If you're still playing Destiny, we took on Crota. We took out Crota. We did it with some pretty good cheese techniques, as well as some legitimate techniques, that if you want to check them out, by all means, definitely go and check them out as good ways to beat Crota efficiently if you do it right, and as well as some of the other parts.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be the shows coming out here soon too, Mike, so I know you're going to be doing a lot with that on your stream on twitch.tv/MikeIsTheHat.
Yeah, we have a whole month before that happens, as well as Borderlands 2 and the pre-sequel coming out as the Handsome Pack. I made a little announcement today on there. That'll be up on my YouTube page about what I'll be doing with that stuff.
Yes, and definitely check out my Twitch stream at twitch.tv/superherodeuce, because that's where we stream a lot of the stuff, like Destiny, FIFA, if we start streaming that at some point, as well as any other games, Minecraft, that we do. So definitely check that out, and hopefully we'll continue to deliver you awesome, great content. So for the Mad Nerds team of Mike and David, I am Superhero Deuce. Thank you all for joining us. Hello to the NSA guy. God bless you all. We are out.